Energy and Environment, chaired by Senator John Kitzhaber, Friday, the 17th of June, 1983, 1 o'clock p.m. in Hearing Room A, hearing on House Bill 2977, requiring certain counties to develop written evacuation procedures for use in event of accident or catastrophe at nuclear power plant, authorizes the governor to assume control of emergency operations in the event of certain nuclear accidents or catastrophes, with other provisions. Senate Bill 779 waives groundwater permit for watering school grounds and fields not exceeding 10 acres. Work session on Senate Bill 623 prohibits operation of non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation source without DEQ permit, requires DEQ to adopt rules, make study, and report to the 1983 legislature, other provisions. Work session on Senate Bill 122 as amended, enacts Water Resources Conservation Management Act, declares state water policy, abolishes the Water Policy Review Board, creates Water Resources Commission, and other provisions.
Energy will come to order. Have Senator Cohen to be along any moment. Senator Hurd is in the Ways and Means Committee and will be a little bit late. we have a hearing on Senate Bill 779 that was introduced at the request of Senator Thorne for the Interfaith Christian Center. And do you have a sign-up sheet there? Or
there.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I have another bill being heard right down the way. I may slip down there, but I'll stay here as long.
Okay. Ron Baker, and if you'd like to come up one at a time or bring it in with you, that's fine, whenever you feel comfortable.
Good Chairman Kitzhaber and members of the committee, we appreciate the opportunity to come before you this afternoon and present testimony on the need for Senate Bill 779. As you are no doubt aware, this bill has been introduced by Senator Mike Thorne, and as you said, Mike plans to be here on behalf of the Interfaith Christian Center. I am Ron Baker. I am chairman of the Board of Elders for Interfaith Christian Center. We have a delegation of representation from our area, which I would like to introduce to the committee. We have our fellow elder, Mr. Ed Sheets, our pastor, Bob Lovett, our school principal, Jack Lincoln, the parent, Rod Harden, our school principal, and also parents, Mr. and Mrs. Brent Horn, who is a fellow cattle feeder with myself. As you can appreciate, we are approaching you this afternoon on a cause that does not affect our business world, but affects our families and the quality of education that we are providing for our children in the Hermiston area. I have handed out to you a brochure that contains some of the letters and correspondence that have led up to this bill. I would like for you to open, if you will, the Senate bill, the reading of it itself. The language is very simple and clear. It is simply the addition as item C to add the wording watering school lawns, grounds, and fields not exceeding 10 acres in area. That is the only change in the wording of the bill. As you are no doubt aware, much more than I, the original statute governing groundwaters was made in the early 1920s, and at that time, it was not addressed. The need for watering school lawns is now required by school districts and by Christian schools as ours, and the need to carry on adequate physical education programs in those schools. The rest of the language of the bill seems to give the same safeguards that is already provided for domestic use and stock watering in item two at the bottom paragraph saying that the use of groundwater for any purpose to the extent that it is beneficial, and also that the Water Resources Director may require additional information and so on to limit any abuse of the statute.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day?
Pardon me, sir, I'd like to ask you a question.
Certainly.
Why are we looking at 10 acres? Why aren't we not just looking at school grounds per se? Why the 10 acres?
Well, that is a little bit of an arbitrary point. It could be school grounds. In pursuing it with the Department of Education, 10 acres is kind of a figure that is tossed around as being at
average size school.
School playground, athletic field, and so on.
I just wondered. I thought that was rather curious. We talk about school grounds. Why 10 acres? Are we talking about school grounds and 10 acres? Are we talking about school grounds per se? That's the average size of a school ground.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
fine. Thank you.
Then the next page is a picture of the playground that we're talking about. In this case, it's only 3 acres. As you can notice, it's in Hermiston, Oregon, in the sandy watermelon capital. But you can see that the adjacent topography supports sagebrush and a little cheatgrass, and certainly will not support any vegetation to support a playground unless it's irrigated. And so that this playground has been established really as a result of a great deal of effort, leveling and then getting some humus and some organic matter in the soil and getting the stand of grass that is there. And certainly to allow it at any point to not be irrigated during the 105 degree weather that we entertain in that area, which is only about an 8-inch rainfall belt, basically is disastrous. So that leads us to wanting to, it's necessary that we arrive at a solution to how to maintain that playground under the problem that we face. Interfaith Christian Center was established approximately 8 years ago, and as part of its mission that it felt very strongly was to establish a Christian school to provide some quality, well-disciplined education to our children, teaching not only discipline but moral standards as well as academic excellence. And I could spend all afternoon telling you about the contribution that the school has made to particular individuals, and we have some of those parents here who will testify to the benefit it's been to their families. So it's been a net addition to the area. When we acquired this 40 acres, which is basically just a high sand dune, there was no water available to be provided by the city, even though we petitioned to be within the city limits. The city of Hermiston could not provide any water. And generally in this area, most of the waters are found in the gravel area at less than 200 feet. However, when we drilled our well, we did not find any water in the gravel area and had to go ahead and penetrate the basalt area and found an adequate supply of water at 500 feet, which is in what is called the basalt, Columbia basalt level. We made our application for water rights to irrigate the lawn and so on with the Department of Water Resources in 1980. And the next page gives you just the acknowledgement of the receipt of that water application by the Department of Water Resources. At that time, we became aware that we were in the Butter Creek critical groundwater area. Now, for those that are living in that area, we consider ourselves, we are just west of Hermiston, about 2 miles, and Butter Creek is generally south of the freeway. And I'll have this larger map here to show you. The map you have in your brochure is of this little arm going up here along the east side of Ordnance. The main part of the Butter Creek critical groundwater area is down here, and that is where very deep wells have had to be drilled for irrigation, and then there has been considerable controversy as to a dropping water table. We have been identified as being in the northern sub-area, and I will address that further in my testimony, that basically we were surprised at that time to find you in that area, and I think that eventually it is even within the possibility it could be exempted, because there is most of the water is surface water or is in the gravels, except if you're in the unfortunate situation that on your land you can't find any water there, and therefore you penetrate the basalt layer. The next page just identifies some of the additional correspondence that we had in pursuing getting the approval to our permit application, which was given an application number, but the last paragraph on the letter from Ralph Jackson says, no action will be taken towards processing the application until the proceeding has been completed. This proceeding is the proceeding on the Butter Creek critical groundwater area, and that has been in action at least since 1976, and I think it's safe to say that anyone that's close to that issue that is no closer to solution today than it was then, and we could be a good long, long time before it is resolved. So the department finds itself, on one hand, for various reasons, not being able to act on the permit application, but on the other hand, having an enforcement law that says in the Act that no water shall be used unless you have a permit. And we assumed that as long as the application was there, that an application had been granted, it was not denied but neither accepted, that we would be allowed to water until a decision was made on the critical groundwater area. Such is not the case. The department has, I think due to maybe a complaint or I don't know what the reason, but came last summer and said, you must shut off the water on this lawn, on this play field. And we said, well, you know, we can't shut off the water. If we do, we lose the play field. We then have a dust bowl, a menace instead of an addition to the school, and we don't have a play field. The next letter, dated June 24th, is my letter to Jim Sexton, giving some additional background on the situation that we found ourselves in, pointing out that we, of course, were not aware that we were in that when we drilled the well. There was no other alternative sources available to us. The play field was providing a benefit not only to us, but to the community. It's been used by the soccer league of the Little League, and in that area, play fields are hard to come by, very important. And asking his to discuss the matter further with him, which we did at a later time. But it's a little difficult and puts you in an awkward position when the Department of Water Resources, I had to step forward as the chairman of the elders and get served with a citation that I was in, that I had allowed something to go contrary to the law, and that was continued watering. And I don't appreciate being in that situation, not as the president of C&B Livestock, nor as the chairman of the Board of Elders. We want to be law-abiding citizens, and we don't want to solve a problem like this in the criminal courts, certainly, and would like to solve it first with the department. And as we explored this with the department, our attorney and myself met with Jim Sexton and discussed the matter with him and Newt Perry. And of course, they are caught by the law says, and they are required to administer the law as it is on the books. And we respect that position and the charge that they are given, of course, by the legislature and by the governor to carry that out. The next letter is the explanation of the different steps that were taken, an explanation to Mike Thorne by Jim Sexton of the Water Resources Department. I put that in there to document their, which gives a clear documentary on the proceedings that have happened. Of course, as pointed out, there is considerable controversy of how important and if there is a declining water table in this northern sub area. And whether we are in fact using water that is not ever going to be there. And I'll point out a little additional testimony on that in just a moment. It became clear that the only way to really resolve this problem, both for the Department of Water Resources and for Interfaith Christian Center, was to seek a legislative solution. It became clear that the legislature in the early days of this act had not addressed whether play fields, school grounds, was a valid use of groundwater resources, and whether it should in fact be an exempted use. And that is what this bill is saying, that it is a valid use of groundwater within prescribed limits. The next letter in the brochure is the one that I drafted with my attorney to Mike Thorne to ask for a legislative remedy and the simple addition of what you are hearing in this bill. It is, I think you can appreciate that we are locked in a dilemma, which we feel that this is the only solution. We have explored the various alternatives that Jim Sexton, Director of Water Resources, has given us as to other sources of water, and those are basically three. One, could you get water from the city? And after this letter, there's a letter from the city. The city is in the same problem. They draw some of their water from the critical groundwater area, some from shallow wells in the gravel basalts. It's simply taking water from one groundwater resource and placing it in place of another one.
Senator Starkovich, excuse me, sir.
I have a general question.
Okay.
In a critical groundwater area, I don't want to ask this in a snide way. In a critical groundwater area, where you're perhaps looking at shutting off a well, why should we keep a playground and a football field green?
Because if you do not keep a playground or football field green, in this area it is nothing but sand if you continue to use it as a play field. And the winds blow 30 miles an hour as they are today in Hermiston, and it blows dust over onto the neighbors. And that is so you basically can't use the area for a play field because you're disturbing the very small amount of cheatgrass that may be able to establish itself, which is just not subject to the foot traffic of a play field.
Is there a fire hazard presented if it's not watered? I know in Western Oregon that
No, there's not that much vegetation.
Okay.
In 8 inches of rainfall and sand, and I'm talking about as coarse a sand as you can possibly imagine, it just plain dries up, and the cheatgrass can get about that high in it.
Okay.
And if you have a lot of foot traffic of very much in it, then it becomes a dust bowl. And of course, that is untenable within a city limits or where we have residences that are a quarter of a mile to the east towards the direction where the prevailing winds would blow such.
So it's a soil erosion concern. Okay.
Yes, that would be correct. The other alternative is to go to surface water, and surface water irrigation is not available to us. We've checked with Jim Bevins, chairman, the manager of the Hermiston Irrigation District, and the particular canal that comes close to us. Of course, that water is already committed by prior water rights and is actually a small canal and is overcommitted at this point, and so they would not be able to provide us water. We have then explored, as Jim Sexton asked us to, if there was any other certificated water right holders in the northern sub-area that would be willing to sell or trade or anything their water rights for so that we could provide one. And that is on table two, next to the last page in this handout to you. And you will notice that we find that there is actually only two areas, two primary acres, they are circled, 49 and 15 acres, that would even qualify to be exchanged. And we have contacted those people, and they are not willing to exchange. It is interesting to note that 106 acres is all, the third item, 106 acres, is owned by the Union Pacific Railroad, and this water is not even being used. It is also true that the third item from the bottom, are you with me, or the column I'm in, primary acres, the third 80 acres of Marion Shays is also, there was no water in that well. So actually in this area that's about 2 miles wide and about 6 miles long, there is actually only about 49 plus 15 plus about another 90 acres actually drawing primary water from this water source, which is a fairly small amount of water from a rather substantial area. So it's, but this afternoon we are not going to satisfy or determine the Butter Creek critical groundwater issue, certainly. We are just caught in a situation that on one hand, to comply with the regulations to shut off the water, we lose the play field. On the other hand, we feel that the use of water on a 3-acre play field is not going to make a drastic difference in the critical groundwater area and is a beneficial use of water for the community purposes, because this serves the community. The school is open to all, any children that wish to enroll and comply, and so we have children there from many different faiths, not just our own. And as I've pointed out, it's providing a service, a very needed service, to the community. We have excellent relations with the city and with the community. And so it comes down to the fundamental question, is the use of water for school playground purposes under proper restrictions as contained in this bill an acceptable exempted use because of the obvious benefits to the total community? We believe it is, and ask your committee to report this bill out favorably. I would be glad to answer any additional questions, and there are other members from that would also like to make a brief comment as to the merits of the bill.
I guess I'd ask about the Union Pacific not, that is not using their 106 here. Have you approached them, and is it not possible to get some temporary, or is that too, I guess I need to have a better fix up what the proximity is to that.
The Union Pacific is, on this map, is number 29. What happened is the Union Pacific bought this ground for other development purposes. We're not interested in irrigating it at all. It has a very crooked well, and so they just let the land lay idle because they were interested in it for industrial development, not... Now, actually, the water law requires that you must use the water within 5 years, and we have not pursued it because if it was contested, that water right would not even be valid today, because it has not been used in the last 5 years. So, and if you've dealt with the railroad, it's also, I'd rather get an act of Congress than I would a decision out of the railroad. I've dealt with that department, and they basically do nothing.
Almost like changing one of the commandments, isn't it?
Yes. I think I can.
Is that the way you think?
I agree.
I happen to know a lot about this at my feed yard just across the road from this site.
I have another, I guess I'd ask, Mr. Chairman, if you'd have one more, and I was reading here, so I didn't really put into context your relationship with the city or how that might interface with them. Is it, why would they, can you not get the water from the city?
The city, we are on a high knoll.
Mm-hmm.
And the city has a water line that, for their water system, they like to have a looped line. And they have just recently put a line to our property limits for fire control, but they do not want to supply the amount of water that it takes for a play field because that draws down on their pressure. The pressure is very marginal at this point. And plus, it would also cost about $1,100 a month for them to provide the water. And you can appreciate at Christian School, there is no tax support or anything of that sort. This is all paid for by parents and so on. And that would be an additional economic burden that would be very difficult for the school to pay, plus marginal water and marginal pressure limits.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Thank you very much, sir. I think I'll have Senator Thorne. I see him. Do you want to make a statement to Mike?
I just don't believe I'm here, but I would, for the record, make a comment.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Senator Mike Thorne. The bill before you was introduced after, as you've got in the material, some correspondence that I had and discussions that I've had with the Department of Water Resources and the proponents who have asked that it be introduced, so I don't need to go into detail. We tried to find an alternative, but unfortunately it seemed that the legislative remedy may well be the only viable remedy. Mr. Baker's done an excellent job in explaining the problem to you, and there's other people that want to comment. I wanted you to know where the bill came from. It was at their request, and I introduced it for them. And I'd be available at any time, but I think they ought to tell you the story. Mr. Sexton is here if you care to ask him for any technical information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Lovett? Welcome.
I'm Reverend Bob Lovett, pastor of Interfaith Christian Center and School. And we are very grateful that this committee will entertain the idea of making an omission in this bill for school grounds to be watered. Well, I think you can very well see that we are sort of caught in a box, and other schools throughout the state would be caught in the very same thing, that the city cannot guarantee us water. If it is against the law of the state that we cannot use our well for water, what do we do? So we do not believe that watering 3.5 acres of ground is going to make or break the Battle Creek ground water level. That is just a very small place to irrigate, and there'll be other schools in around the state, I'm sure, that this is going to come up with.
Excuse me, sir, I have
and
a question
so,
for you.
Yes.
Senator Thorne?
If your purpose is to water 3.5 acres, then why is the bill written to say 10?
Senator Day asked that very question. The customary land area from schools throughout the state is that no school should be built on in any area where you don't have at least 10 acres. And so that's sort of an arbitrary figure. See? And that's where we picked up the 10 acres figure. We're not setting concrete on that 10 acres, but that's where the 10 acres came from.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I think one of the supporters of the bill also indicated that he would not be uncomfortable if we talked about the school grounds and grounds and lawn concern. I don't think that that bothered him at all. How do you feel about that?
Well, I would agree too. Okay. We just feel like here just one school, one church in the vast state of Oregon, is sort of with a real small thing of our responsibility and degree that you have other responsibilities, and we are very appreciative that you'd consider the idea, but we have no other remedy, and so we're asking you to give us that remedy, and we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions? Additional questions, Ms. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Harden?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name's Rod Harden. I'm the principal of Interfaith Christian School. We have at this time 85 students with students K through 12. And one of the things we believe in educating the total person, and this of course involves a physical education program that would involve playground and recreational activities. And I think, in fact, in some cases you mentioned about 10 acres. If you start adding a track field, a soccer field, a softball field, a football field, other areas, you might even find that might be a little bit tight.
Was there any opposition expressed by the local governments concerning?
Only by Eugene, I believe. They did not really want to have the city have to have a program.
No, but I understand it's optional for a city, right?
Pardon?
But it is optional.
It is optional for a city, right. But they just simply wanted it to state that the county shall.
Yes.
Identifies the responsibilities of and the work that an emergency service worker may be engaged in and how they are covered under workman's compensation. Also gets into search and rescue and the fact the sheriff is responsible in every county for that function. If he chooses not to take on that responsibility, it is automatically assigned to the emergency program manager of that county, but that is basically up to the sheriff to decide.
Do all counties have programs at this point?
I believe they do, and Sheriff Dolan should be able to.
Well, if I may, there are 17 jurisdictions in the state of Oregon that receive federal funds for the program. One of those jurisdictions is the city of Portland, and the rest are counties. Some of the smaller counties do not have active programs that receive federal monies, but every county does have a person appointed as the emergency services coordinator.
Do they have a SAR?
Pardon me?
Every county has a SAR.
I think every county has a search and rescue program. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Easier to work from engrossed copy.
And then the remainder of the bill is simply deleting the civil defense terminology and replacing that with the emergency service worker and emergency management terminology.
Any other additional questions?
Has staff had a chance to review?
No, I think we'll also take action on this one next Friday because I think Todd wants a little time to be able to go through this. We have to be able to answer questions on the floor. I just had a question. I think it was in your beginning statement. You said this was the third attempt to do this. What happened to the first two attempts?
Well, I'll let Myra address that.
It got tied up in ways and means because we were also trying to deal with the issues related to coverage of the volunteer emergency service workers. We decided this time not to deal with that, to leave it as it is, and simply attempt to get the terminology changed and to update the bill. And then we would try to deal later on with the issue of the coverage. Right.
Okay.
It's our intent to not really change anything from what we're doing now, but merely update the language, and hopefully there's no zingers or sleepers in this bill.
Senator Haney?
Yes, help me understand the rationale of the House Committee on page 2, lines 37 through 40, for the deletion of any reference to air disasters, aircraft, downed aircraft, etc.
Okay, this has to do with the fact that the Aeronautics Division of the State of Oregon is the lead agency relating to air search. And there was a problem with the way the bill was originally worded that confused that issue a little bit. And so we're trying now to make it clear that the Emergency Management Division coordinates, but the primary responsibility for air search is with the Aeronautics Division.
Okay.
We had a similar problem with the Department of Energy as it related to Trojan, and we also have that clarified, we believe.
See, I had one more question. Oh, could you just speak very briefly to the additional amendments that you'd like us to adopt?
Okay. The principal amendment is to remove ORS 401-530 from the repealer section.
That's the governor's power.
Yes, and that's the governor's power, and it just merely indicates when the governor can take control of a situation and what his powers are. And it's just retaining the language that's in the existing law. And that was that was in the repealer section. We feel in error. And then the rest of the amendments are to just change the section numbers. And then the one amendment that we talked about a few minutes ago, deleting the language over on page 3, line 11 and 12, which would require a new declaration every 30 days. We think that would be too cumbersome.
On page 1, you've deleted... lines, please.
Oh, excuse me.
Yes, lines 19 and 20 and part of line 18.
I'm sorry.
Could you speak to that also?
The language you deleted was that, and the governor determines, in accordance with section 1 to 39 of this act, the lack of coordination is hampering the effectiveness of response to an emergency. We feel that ORS 401-530, delineates when the governor can move into a situation and take control and what his powers are, and the governor feels very strongly that that he should be able to do that without making a determination that a lack of coordination is hampering effectiveness. It seemed like a little bit of a nebulous requirement that would serve no real purpose.
Okay. Very good. Are there additional questions? Thank you very much.
You bet.
Is there anyone else that wish to speak to this? Okay. We've got quorum now. What I'd like to do, if there's no objection, is adopt those amendments so that Todd will have a complete bill. So, Senator Cohen would move the adoption of the amendments on the page dated May 26, 1983, to the House passed HB 2977. Is there objection to that? Okay. Okay. And
you
I
want to send the bill out?
Todd needs a little time to.
Okay.
So we'll put this up Friday with 779.
Mr. Chairman? We'll
close the hearing on 2977. Do you have a comment on this bill?
No, I have a comment on something else.
Okay. Yes, Senator Davis.
I'd like to pass out for you. I asked Greg McMurdo to recommend some changes to Senate Bill 562. I just passed them out for your perusal. I know you're going to take it up on Monday. I just want to reflect a view I have, and Senator Hurd isn't here, but I will share with you that I think it's his view is identical. We've been in this submersible navigable question for so long, it's almost like a deepening pit that you fall in forever. I would say that I certainly do not support crippling the state land board. And on the other hand, this study has created so much problems in my district and other districts, just the study, not the question there's been anything done. And the purpose of the changes that Mr. McGurnville, and I am having legislative council prepare these in proper form, I just think it behooves us to review that with dispatch and to make a decision up or down on it. My view is that, and I can tell you, Senator Hurd isn't here, but I will share with you, he feels likewise and supports that move.
Yes, we discussed this this morning, and I do feel that we need to take some action fairly soon on this issue. And I'd ask the committee to go ahead and look at these amendments over the weekend, and then we'll consider that on Monday, I think.
And I just thought I'd share these, what they came from the Secretary of State's office. But I will tell you that I have taken the trouble to check with the governor, and these are his views as well. Okay, both the Secretary of State and the governor support this bill.
Okay. Is there any other business?
No, I'd like to adjourn and
you will adjourn. I want to thank you for just a wonderful job on the floor today.
Yes.
Oh, you all did great, and I really appreciate it. Todd, I meant every word. You guys have worked your heart out, and both Elizabeth and Kevin, and you're a good gang. And I'm not sure we say thank you often enough, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Kevin.
And thank you, LB, for being the one more time the savior of the day, because we were worried that God had left us when we were trying to figure out where is LB.